Welcome to episode 270 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on February 18th, 2022. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. Today, Scott's computer has a complete meltdown right as we start recording, so Ben chats with listeners in Discord while Scott recovers. Once we pick back up, we talk Microsoft Teams phones, Windows 365 Enterprise, and Azure AD, deleting enterprise VMs, and Stream 2.0. Are we starting off with docs? We're going to do two hardware episodes in a row.
No, we're not.
No, I did have a network issue. I sent you the link about it. Apparently, this dock and the network interface on it don't like energy efficient mode. So I did have to go into my network connection and make some manual tweaks to it. So CalDigit does have an article all about that, but definitely keep that in mind and don't try to also force it to 2.5 gigabit if you're only running a gigabit connection because it doesn't work. Have to make sure, like the whole manual setting to turn off energy efficiency, you also need to manually set the speed of your NIC. Other than that, my Jabra... Oh, that's the other thing with it. My Jabra Puck doesn't work anymore. I don't know why. I think I might need a reboot because it wasn't working over USB or Bluetooth. So I haven't rebooted since I swapped out docks. We'll have to give that a try. But other than that, it's been working well.
Well, okay then. Sounds like you've got a great handle on it.
So when yours comes, I do have a handle on the dock. I also have a phone. I bought a phone, Scott. I have not had a desk phone in years.
So you didn't just buy a desk phone, you bought a Microsoft Teams phone.
I did. And I won't lie, now I kind of want a Windows machine to test some things with. So I have a couple clients that are I'm working on implementing phone system for. And up until now, everybody I've done phone system with has just used, like they've done what we do, Jabra Puck, headset connected to the computer. They just use Teams on the computer. But a couple of these clients are like, well, we want to use desk phones for our team system. And I last time I had a desk phone connected to Office 365.
I lost your audio.
So, Scott, do you know how many files are shared outside your organization? Or are you sure that every team in your Microsoft 365 tenant has a valid owner? Guess what? ShareGate's got your back. After helping thousands of customers move to Office 365, they've learned that success in the cloud involves more than just migration. That's why they created ShareGate Apricot, an automated governance platform for Microsoft Teams and Microsoft 365 groups. ShareGate Apricot can help you answer questions like these without planning unnecessary restrictions on your users. With ShareGate Apricot, you get full visibility across each team's lifecycle from creation all the way through to archival. You can automate manual tasks involved in identifying problem areas like inactive or orphan teams. And you can collaborate with team owners on corrective measures to keep your teams tidy and secure. That's also why they've combined ShareGate Desktop, their trusted migration and content management tool, with ShareGate Apricot in a single subscription so that you have everything you need to be successful in the Microsoft cloud. I was absolutely making fun of you when you couldn't hear me. For a while, I had your armpit frozen on my screen.
Oh, that's cool. Just me waving my hands and all sorts of
shame
and whatever. All right. Well, let's get into it then.
Okay. So we talked about docs. They all work. Scott needs a new computer. We've determined that. But today, we're going to talk about news. How's that?
Sounds delightful.
Oh, I was getting other. Oh, hey, Torg, that roadmap ID is a multi-language meeting invite control. That 8152. We were talking about Windows 3. Oh, we were talking about my phone. See, I knew if I rambled long enough, we'd get there.
Yes, desktop Teams phones. You got a Yealink. However you say it.
Yealink? I don't know. Is it Yealink? Yealink? Is it kind of like Sim and Seam? I don't know. But yeah, the last time I actually used a desktop phone with Office 365 or Microsoft 365 was a Skype for Business phone. And it worked okay. It was taking up space on my desk. I was like, you know what? The computer audio works fine. And now I have a few clients that want a desk phone, so I figured I'd give another one a try. So I got the MP58. And it's nice. I've played with it a little bit. It has a Bluetooth handset, so I don't have to like get all tangled in the cord. With the headset, I think it has a 7-inch or 9-inch touchscreen, and they actually run Android. So it's like Android with a custom Teams app on it. And pops up my meeting reminders, calendars, phone calls, all of that. One interesting thing about it, that I was doing some reading as I'm looking into all of this, and I was working, or I was in some Teams meetings, and I was like, okay, so I wonder how it would work to use the phone or my audio, but still have the Teams meeting on my computer, because screen sharing, if I'm looking at like a little 9-inch screen on a phone, just not going to work. For the Mac, there's really no option. I essentially join the meeting twice, but then my mutes get all confused because I have the phone mute, I have the Teams mute.
So it's not viewed as a proper device. I mean, if I want to join a Teams meeting and I have my iPad here and I've got my phone here and I've got my computer in front of me, I can join from all three of those. So I typically, what I'll do is like, if I'm on my iPad, I'll do the same thing. I'll join from my iPad. And then when I go to join the meeting on my desktop, like on Mac OS, it just says, oh, you're already in this meeting. Would you like to add a device or transfer a device?
So it does not give me that option. Today in the meeting I went to, my phone, like the desk phone, didn't show up as a user or device in the meeting. So I had my computer person in the meeting and my phone was just some ghost device. Now it's signed in as me.
That's strange.
Yeah, because it was signed in as me. So I'm like, okay, so maybe it picks it up and like associates that I'm already in the meeting and phones are a special case and it marries the two together. But like the Teams mute control doesn't affect the phone. It was kind of bizarre. So I did some more reading about it, because in the phone settings too, I can actually like pick to add it says add a device. What that essentially means is if you have your phone and your computer, you can link the two of them together so that the phone acts as an extension of your Teams client on your computer for the audio. So it would kind of accomplish what I was trying to do, but that is only supported on Windows.
Of course.
Of course it is. So if you have a Teams phone and you're trying to do the whole meeting thing, it's a little weird. But in terms of like answering calls or just making phone calls where you're not really worried about the screen share or any of that, it seems to work great so far.
I would really miss that functionality of being able to transfer a call though, when I move away. Because I also go the other way. I'll be sitting here on my desktop doing something and the kids will make a noise, something will crash, but I still want to keep listening in on that call. So I'll just transfer it over to my iPad or my phone and walk away. And having the inability to transfer from the device, that's kind of annoying.
So I haven't tried transferring from the device yet. That may work. Because I have all of the phone controls on the device. I just can't link the phone to my computer. So the phone essentially acts like my puck does, like a USB or a wireless speakerphone for my Teams meeting. So I should try that. I should join a call and try to transfer it to my phone or transfer it to my computer or something like that.
Yeah, having the ability, like if you can't join from multi-device, having a transfer function would be nice to have.
Yeah, well, and it's not, I can join from multiple devices. It just doesn't show up in my Teams meeting as a device. So like if I would join our Teams meeting, here, I can show you because we're on Teams. So right now I can join here, and I'll make sure we don't get feedback. Join now. I muted there.
Nope, you got the echo. Good job.
Yeah, I still ended up with echo. Let me turn the volume down. There we go. So I'm on my phone right now. So I have the two devices, but you can see in our meeting that there's not another device or user that got added.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah, that's the way it's supposed to work. So if I join from three devices in front of you, you still only see one of me because it's only one of me.
Well, but now if I mute, the mute control in Teams, if I, let's try this. I'm going to unmute my phone, mute here. And even though I'm muted in Teams, you can probably still hear me.
I can still hear you, but you're coming through the phone now.
Because it's coming through the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. That functionality is a little weird in terms of I don't have like computer mute controls and people will be like, oh, you're muted in the computer. You're unmuted on the computer, but I'm on the phone. And it's a little, I would prefer a little bit more of a seamless integration for the Mac client. But again, I think you can get that from the Windows based on what I'm reading. I'll have to go stand up a Windows device.
Give it a shot. Let us know how it goes.
Yeah, I'll have to do that. So that is my Teams phone experience. But overall, like it seems like a solid device. Takes up a bunch of space on my desk. But it's been fun to play with.
Well, that's what phones are. Just space wasters.
Space wasters. Yeah, pretty much. So that was a long dialogue about phones. Although now my time is all messed up because you were gone for like 10 minutes.
I'll let you figure it all out later.
Other news in the Microsoft 365 space, because I know this is one we have talked about, and I have actually had clients asking me about this one. Windows 365. Up until now, if you wanted to do just a pure Azure AD join, you had to do Windows 365 for Business. Just this week, sometime, I need to go find the official Microsoft article because this came, I saw it somewhere else. Windows 365 Cloud PC Enterprise now is allowing you to do an Azure AD join. So you don't need to do, or you won't need to do soon. This might still be in preview. Similar case of selecting Azure AD Join for Windows 365 Enterprise Edition. I don't think this is even preview. I think this hit GA. So added, let me go look. Here's the Windows Enterprise February. It was in the Windows 365 Enterprise February 2022 updates that you can now do a Windows Azure or an Azure AD Join with Windows 365 Enterprise. So I can go kill my hybrid environment now because other than testing, that was the only other reason I had that up. It is public preview.
It's going to get really interesting out there once Azure AD potentially has like broader Kerberos support and can start to do weird things like that, that traditionally would have required AD in the past. But we'll see like where the tipping point ends up being, if it remains like an authentication thing or, you know, do other management methodologies like GPOs sneak their way in somehow.
Right. Well, in GPOs, I would say not GPOs, but you already have a lot of ADMX templates and settings that are available.
Sort of, but they're not ADMX templates that are pushed from Azure AD.
Yes, they are. You can push ADMX templates from Azure AD. You can't upload your own. You can go select some. Have we not talked about this yet? We're going to have to talk about this. All right. There are a lot of, and I would say not everything's there, but I have done a few, one project in particular, where they were looking to go from AD and GPOs on-prem to Azure AD. And we probably got 80% of the way there with settings that we could push from Azure AD via Intune, mobile device management, endpoint management, that typically in an on-prem world you do with GPOs.
Yeah, so you've got like the ADMX crap inside of Intune, but that's a halfway thing. Like it's not full-blown GPO, nor is it anything on the order of even like the out-of-the-box GPOs that are in like Azure AD domain services.
Okay, so yeah, so if you're comparing it to that, you're thinking Azure AD, not endpoint management.
So when I say GPO, I think like that's one of those things you have to tear down. Yeah.
Yes. Got it. Okay. That makes sense. Yes. From that perspective, you cannot push ADMX template stuff from Azure AD native. It is endpoint management, device management pushing. Do you think it'll ever come to Azure AD though? I see it always being an endpoint management thing.
I don't know. I never thought Kerberos was going to come, and here it is.
Here it is. Yeah, but Kerberos they didn't have anywhere else in the Microsoft 365 ecosystem as much. Like they're already doing ADMX templates with endpoint management. So I guess from that perspective, I'm like, are they really, would they take it out of endpoint management and put it into native Azure AD? I don't see that happening, I guess. I see it staying in endpoint management, Azure AD P1 licensing thing.
It depends, right? Can you tie all the things that you do with user-targeted GPOs today if you start retargeting them to devices? Probably not. You end up with a bunch of just things that are either going to be left in the dust, or I can't even imagine like how complicated those become. Like when you start to think about the number of devices a user could potentially have and all the operating systems and functionality on each, and it gets weird quick.
Yeah. How does GPO though handle it if you're doing multiple versions of, well, multiple versions of devices, you still have all the registry keys. Because mm-hmm. that's what a lot of GPOs are doing, is just updating registry keys. So you're thinking with multiple users on one device?
The magic of Windows.
Yeah, I don't know. It would be interesting.
Well,
we'll have to see.
It's not here today, and it's all speculation, so don't even listen to us.
No, you're not supposed to tell people not to listen. Okay, so we can be done pontificating about Microsoft 365, Windows 365 for now, and Azure AD and Intune.
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business.
I have spent a bunch of time talking about things that have gotten me excited. What's gotten you excited in the last week, Scott? Besides your doc coming next week.
Besides my doc coming next week. So a couple of things were announced this week that I think like have, it's all good, but it starts to change things and make it a little bit weird. So one is the announcement of GA for a capability to automatically delete a virtual machine's associated resources at the time the VM is deleted. So when you create a virtual machine in Azure, a VM is never just a VM. It's a virtual machine. It's one or more managed disks. It's a NIC. It's got all these kind of resources that are running parallel with it, but they're all part of making the virtual machine work. And in the past, the way it worked was if you wanted to delete a virtual machine, you would go in and you could delete the VM resource, but then you had all the other resources around it that you potentially had to clean up, like those NICs, those disks, everything else. So you might have been lucky and grouped just like one VM to one resource group and been able to delete the resource group, or maybe you had a PowerShell script or a Bash script, something like that, that could just loop over and enumerate all those resources based on like, you know, a start or end of the name, something like that, and clean it all up for you. Either way, like a pretty painful experience. So the VM creation experience itself is changing a little bit. There's going to be some new options and they're out there today. So if you just go into the Azure portal and you say, I want to create a new resource and I'm going to create a virtual machine, and you know, you start nexting your way through that series of blades, you're going to have extra checkboxes now on the disk options blade or the disks blade, and also the networking blade. So by default, they're going to be checked. And for disks options, it's going to say, hey, delete with VM. So if that checkbox is checked, on the ARM side of things, like on the management plane, you're going to have an attribute that's or a piece of metadata that's associated with that virtual machine, so that ARM knows when you delete the VM to go and then delete those associated resources along the way.
So this is a setting at provisioning.
At provisioning, yes. And it's on by default.
Very good to know. I don't know that I like that, but it's good to know.
Yeah. They're at provisioning. Like I said, go create a new resource. These buttons and checkboxes are there today. Data disks are a little bit different because when you're adding additional data disks to a VM, you could either be creating a new data disk or you could be attaching a new disk. So if you go for create and attach a brand new disk, on that page, that little pane that pops up to create the disk, you're going to have the option there to, again, have the checkbox delete the disk with the VM. So you could check or uncheck that as needed along the way. And then if you're going to attach an existing disk, and this one's going to get confusing, attach an existing disk is also going to have the option to delete with a VM. So you'll have to remember now, like, oh, I'm using a disk that previously existed. Like maybe I deleted the VM itself, but I wanted to retain the disk. Now, when you bring that VM back and you go create the VM resource again, and you want to attach the existing disk, if you want to be able to retain that disk on VM delete, you're going to want to make sure that you uncheck that checkbox. And then the same thing happens on the networking tab. So you go to the networking tab, almost all the way down towards the bottom, there's going to be a checkbox there for deleting the public IP and the NIC when a VM is deleted. And that's an interesting one because NICs don't have to have public IPs by default. Like public IPs are yet another resource. Right. So there's almost like resource chaining going on there where it's saying like, okay, I have a NIC and I provisioned a public IP that's associated with that NIC. So go delete both these resources at the time of VM deletion. All that's going to be there by default. Like it's like I said, it's baked, it's GA'd, it's out the door. If you have existing virtual machines, you go like, all right, this functionality is something that I'm interested in. You can actually go ahead and issue patch operations through the REST API today. So just like the management.azure.com REST API, and you can patch your existing virtual machines and the associated resources in them, the disks, the NICs, all those kinds of things, and say that you would or would not like them to be deleted at the time your VM is deleted.
So can you turn it off after a VM has been provisioned?
So I don't know. I haven't tried that one yet. You'd have to patch the VM to do it because there's nothing in the UI to do it.
Disable it. So because I have... I almost want this to be an option when I delete the VM, not necessarily on by default. Because, okay, so I had a scenario when I was working with a client where they had a bunch of backups of VMs using Resource Vault. And I don't know if there's something that's changed here. So they had all these VMs backed up. Long story short, they had a whole bunch of things go on. They had to blow away their production VMs, restore them from the backup vault. However, when you restore a VM from the backup vault, it did not retain availability sets that these VMs were joined to. And the only way to reconfigure availability sets was actually to delete the VM, leave all the resources behind, recreate the VM, and join it to an availability set.
Yep.
If this setting was on and you can't turn it off, you'd have a problem.
So you can turn it off. You just have to issue a patch operation to do it today.
It would be a patch. Okay.
Yeah, because it's not exposed via...
anywhere else.
I didn't see it in the portal. Maybe I just missed it. I might have to go try and create some new VMs and see if it's there.
See what kind of trouble we can cause with virtual machines deleting.
For the creation operations, it's available in the portal today. CLI and PowerShell also have a new parameter, so delete option. And so you would set like your OS disk delete option, your data disk delete option, network interface delete option all okay. along the way. And then it's just a Boolean value, true, false kind of thing.
Got it. Because I think right now, if you go in, I'm going in to delete a VM. I'm not actually going to delete it. So right now, if I go into the portal and choose to delete a VM, I actually can. Like it lists all the resources and I can go in and check all of those different resources and say, delete with the VM.
You can through the portal, but it's not the default behavior if you're going through like the CLI or PowerShell, because you'd be just deleting that individual resource.
Right. So, and can you pass a parameter like that?
The downstream impact becomes if you're managing through like CLI tools and you've been used to deleting your virtual machines and having those other types of resources retained, you might want to take a look and make sure that you're using the delete option in the way that it needs to be used within your environment.
Yeah. So in the, I haven't tried it recently with a CLI. Can you pass parameters to delete associated resources via the CLI or PowerShell? Or I would think so, because pretty much everything in the portal is available in PowerShell first, because it's just making a REST call.
Yeah. Haven't tried it. Add it to the list of things we need to try.
Our list. We can go, this would make another good YouTube video, Scott, going in and playing with deleting and creating a bunch of VMs. And trying these different options and see all of the different ways we could configure VMs, delete VMs, and preserve or remove associated resources.
Yeah.
We're going to have to add that one.
It's kind of an interesting one. And because virtual machines are virtual machines, you have the ability to set this delete option across kind of every VM type. So not just maybe like your standard IaaS VM, but it would also work for virtual machines in a virtual machine scale set, including if you're using VM Flex, so the flexible orchestration model for VMSS. It works with spot VMs, kind of like all the things, because it's just baked into the into like the Microsoft.compute/virtual machines resource provider. You're all set and ready to go.
Got it. Huh. Something else to fiddle with. So I have one more. Since this is one that came from Torg, who is in the Discord chat with us. And he and I were chatting while you were trying to fix your computer. And there is a new feature in the Microsoft 365 roadmap around the new stream where it's going to come GA April of this year. So April of 2022. Users with edit permissions to a video file uploaded to SharePoint and OneDrive, so you have some video file, you want to upload it, can now click a button in the player to generate closed captions and a transcript in English. So he was commenting that he was wishing there was a way to disable this so that users don't necessarily have these permissions by default. Like in Teams right now, with Teams policies, you can't actually go in and like set policies around what people can do with transcripts when you're actually doing like a meeting recording or a Teams recording. But if for some reason you don't want transcripts or closed captions generated, there's no way to prevent this. Now, I would be curious, because in the chat, is what would be the use case for preventing transcripts for videos? I mean, I guess maybe from a search perspective, because that's what makes a lot of them searchable. And he is saying, oh, that is interesting. Government, if your government and if you have transcripts, it becomes public record.
You don't have to shred the papers for the ones that are never printed, right?
Yeah, and they're not always transcribed correctly. Got it. So then you could, in theory, end up with a transcription that's not correct that becomes public record. And you could end up having, I'm assuming that could lead to some liability issues then if you're using a transcript and it ends up not being correct and it's public record. Huh. Yeah, that's an interesting one. I can totally see from a liability, government, public record perspective why you might not want users to necessarily be able to do that. But that is a new feature coming. Stream. What you can also take away from this is, wonder how much longer Stream 1.0 will be around. More and more of these features from Stream V1 are starting to make it into Stream V2, i.e. put your videos in OneDrive and SharePoint.
Yeah, I just want it to be cleaned up. Like, I really don't care if they revert the whole thing and they say, oh, Stream 1.0 is sticking around. But the whole back and forth between multiple kind of like systems of record when it comes to recording storage is real kind of cognitive burden. And I feel like I'm somebody who's savvy enough with SharePoint and Teams and OneDrive that I should be able to figure it out. And it confuses me sometimes. Like, where is my meeting going to be stored when I do this thing? And you just don't know.
Yeah, I agree. I don't want it to revert to 1.0. I will say that from a consultant's perspective, I love having all the recordings going to SharePoint or OneDrive because it does make it a lot easier for me to share out those recordings. Like, I have a meeting with a client. They're like, hey, can we get a copy of it? Yep, here, click and share it. One thing I wish they would fix from my perspective is I want to be able to pick where my meetings go easier. I get that I can schedule a meeting in a channel in Teams versus like just clicking an Outlook and say, schedule a meeting and email it to these five people. If I include it in a channel in Teams, it's going to go to the SharePoint site associated with that team. I don't always think to do that. And as such, a bunch of my recordings for a whole bunch of different clients all end up in my OneDrive, where I would really like them to be in the SharePoint site associated with that client. So to be able to like have a recording and say, either choose where I'm going to send that recording after the meeting is done. Maybe the solution is I can just go click it and do a traditional SharePoint move. But those are some big files too. So I think there's some things I'd like to see worked out, but I do much prefer having those recordings in SharePoint and OneDrive as opposed to Stream V1.
Yeah, so that's another interesting thing about that, like the kind of storage behind everything and the proliferation of storage within SharePoint and OneDrive. I'd be interested in getting your take on what you see with your customers as they're making that transition with Stream. And we're going more remote and we're recording more things. Like, are you finding that consumption within tenants is going up, potentially to like the point that customers actually need to purchase more data?
Buy more. So I have not had anybody come to me and ask that yet, but I should go through and look at storage usage for a few tenants and see what it has done, especially those that I know are doing more meeting recordings, are all remote. Because I have had that thought, is this definitely could affect that SharePoint storage a lot more. And SharePoint storage is not cheap. We've talked about that before. SharePoint storage is probably the most expensive cloud storage you can get. That being said, that new policy around deleting it every 90 days, I think might help with that some, because you're not retaining these long-term, unless you go in and choose to extend that. After 90 days, you're slowly rolling off recordings. It would be, I might have to do that. Go in and dig through some and see what type of storage effects, if any, that I can determine it might be having.
Yeah, I'd be curious, especially now that it's been out for a while. And right, this is something that's kind of like been in market. Customers have been using it, but I think like the way customers use the product today is different than the way they used it 2 years ago. I'm even finding, I don't know how it goes with you in your interactions. Meeting recordings used to be something that were formal. You'd kind of know if you were hopping into a meeting that was going to be recorded. And I'm finding more and more that recordings are ad hoc. Like if I'm in a one-on-one with somebody or we're in a small team setting and we go, hey, here's this new thing that I want to show off real quick and we'll do a screen share, we'll do recordings of those. So you end up with just all these little 5-minute, 10-minute snippets that are kind of all over the place. You know, you might find in like one-hour meeting that you end up with 4 or 5 separate recordings, just as you've gone through and kind of picked and choosed in that period of time what you wanted to retain for later.
Record. I have not had that experience yet. Most of mine are still, let's click record and we just let it go the whole time.
I notice it a lot with like employee onboarding. So folks who like, in my case, new to Microsoft, you know, we're this massive organization, and quite often I call it like local knowledge, but that just knowledge that's in your head about your space and who you deal with and who you interact with. Like, it's something that you'll never write down and it probably changes every 6 months. But for that new person who's just coming in today, like they want to know those things and be able to come back and refer to them in 2 weeks. So you might be sitting and saying like, oh, hey, let's take a look, or I'm going to teach you this new query for the way we look at data. I'm going to show you this new tool that we just developed and we pushed out to a bunch of customers, or here's a new tool that's available to us to go and learn more about about our business. So you'll tend to like show those things off. And then, you know, click the button, record. 5 minutes later, you're like, oh, I'm done with that. I don't want to be in this recording anymore.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, that has not been my experience yet, but I can see where that might make sense. The other thing I would say is, I guess that's the nice thing about recordings kind of by default going to OneDrive, is you do have a lot more storage there. I can't remember if OneDrive for Business is truly unlimited or if it's something like 5 terabytes now. But by having all of my meetings go into OneDrive, I am saving on that consumption of my SharePoint quota, because that, especially for smaller companies, is a lot smaller than what they have for, or that an employee or 3 employees may have for their OneDrive. So, anywho.
We're at time.
Probably wrap it up. We are at time. So, thank you for making it back after your computer melted down on us.
Yeah, you know, I do what I can over here.
Maybe your new dock will help it. Maybe your new dock will fix all your issues.
Maybe. My new dock, my new office, it's all going to come together at some point.
Is this new office coming together soon? We can talk about this later. We can wrap up the call for now. But
all right, yeah, we'll have to wrap this one because I do have to go to a meeting.
All right, get to your meeting. Thank you for those of you that joined us in Discord today. And I hope, yeah, have a great weekend, Scott. Have a great weekend, everybody else. And we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.